From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, May 10th. I'm your host, Andy Klein. Gunashish, thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, the Juno Jazz and Classic Spring Festival continues tonight and tomorrow with True Blues, featuring Corey Harris and Cedric Watson. We're going to have a preview, maybe a little live music from right here in the studio. Then we're going to zoom all the way out to Auk Bay to the Ocean Guardians Club, who are working to reduce marine debris, and they're learning about composting and microgreens. And then we're going to get some updates from the Juno Community Foundation on the Hope CBJ grants and a lot more from them as well. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. I hope you stay with us.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clean AD have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a eat in. Jin Katka K Jin Talk, Anakaya Haanikak, Gunnish Cheese.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community supported KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, your host on this Friday. And joining me now, Juno Jazz and Classics. All kinds of cool stuff happening in here. Rachel Disney is here from Juno Jazz and Classics. Rachel, step on up to that microphone there. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. We got not only the folks that are going to be in here, Corey Harris and Cedric Watson are going to be in here, and they're going to be doing their kind of amazing stuff, and also maybe a little bit of vocalization. Does that sound like something that might end up happening? Yeah, absolutely. Rachel, tell me a little bit about that concert and what other stuff happening at Juno Jazz and Classics. How you doing?
Thanks, Andy. I'm doing good. We are hitting the ground running. The festival started last weekend, and this is our blues weekend. So we have Corey Harris and Cedric Watson here. They're going to be doing their blues dance tonight at the Jack. Show starts at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30, and we will have tickets at the door. We got lots of space, so come on down. And tomorrow is the blues cruise, so they'll be playing on the boat. Now, we were sold out. I just refunded two tickets, so we might still have two tickets available if somebody wants to snatch them up.
Quick tip. That's a hot tip right here on the radio.
That just happened.
These things are usually sold out so far in advance.
They really are. And also, we have a wait list. So if you go to our website and act like you're going to buy tickets, it will give you an option to put your name on the wait list. So that is another tip for you, too, because we do have no shows every year. So you might still get in if you get your name on the wait list.
All right. Sounds good. Well, that's a good tip. And Corey and Cedric, you can step up. You step up to the Myrtle as we figured it out, or right over here. How you doing? Mm-hmm. Good to see you both in here. Tell me just a little bit about the music that you guys do together. You were saying you're from Lafayette?
Lafayette, Louisiana. Yeah. That's where I came from last night, for sure. And half of my life, of course, I grew up in San Felipe, Texas, and, you know, I'm down in that region.
Uh-huh, yeah. And what about you? You're from that area as well, or where are you from?
No, I was born in Colorado. I live in Virginia now. I've been in Virginia for most of my life, but I was born and raised in Colorado. My family's from Texas, Kentucky, Arkansas, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Spread of the South there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how you guys collaborate.
Well, how do we collaborate? It's really just like, to me, it's like we just exchange. It's almost like a spiritual prayer.
That's
you
it.
Know, it's an exchange of spiritual essence, you know, of history. You know, it's a conversation,
right.
You know. So yeah, he's coming out of, you know, the Creole roots, and I'm coming out of the blues roots, and it's all coming out of that, still that African diaspora. So yeah, we have a lot in common, you know.
Sure.
You know, really, as you say, it's really, there's some distinct styles there, but in some ways they're so related and come from a common source.
That's right.
True. Yeah.
It's that African diaspora, I would say, you know, and also the common source, you know, and you tell me if you agree with this, Corey, but a lot of this is like, I like to try to stress back home even to a lot of people, is that like the blues and these things like Zydeco and Creole music, they originated really in a plantation setting. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times that this, and not just completely in a plantation setting, but that's where the music, where these things came together like that. Like
context.
Music and things.
Yeah. That's true.
So the instruments they were using were instruments that were available, the music, but it was also bringing forward the music that was part of their tradition before they arrived in this country.
Well, the predominant instruments we know were the banjo and the fiddle.
That's right.
You know, up until the end of the minstrel era.
Were made of gourds predominantly.
Mm-hmm, really up until the early 20th century, you know. And then I guess a variety of different percussion instruments, you know, jugs, washboards, spoons, bones, donkey jaw bones, mm-hmm. You know.
it's an amazing to think about that. Mm-hmm. What instruments have you settled on that you are the ones that are the ones that kind of speak to you, and that you?
I play guitar.
You play guitar.
Yeah.
And you're on fiddle, or?
Well, yeah. I play mainly what I play with my band and everything, and the songs that I write is accordion and fiddle. And I find that the majority of the tunes that I write are going to be on the accordion, the double row. But I do write tunes on the fiddle too.
You know, how does that kind of shake out as far as when you're writing, you're working on something, does something just feel like it's more fiddle, more accordion? How do you?
I think whenever like the song comes to me already, I hear the instrument already being played. I can hear the band, you know, I can hear myself playing with it or whatever, singing, and what the melody is going to be like. So that's how it normally comes. And normally the melody of it comes first. Sometimes it may even be like a chorus, you know, but then everything just comes together.
Yeah, you know, listening to songwriters who often they work on either guitar or piano. You know, that's often one or the other. And something just speaks to them as it's a piano. The chords arrange themselves in a piano way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a guitar way. Sometimes it's just what they have at hand, too, right? They just happen to walk up to a piano or walk up to a guitar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you guys, I know you don't have your instruments with you today, but is there maybe an a cappella thing you could do? We got this awesome microphone behind you. Is that something you'd be willing to?
Sure, there's something we could do.
Be willing to do?
Victory.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We could sing a spiritual.
That would be, I would love that. Is that something you'd be willing to step up to the mic and go ahead and do?
Sure.
All right.
We'll sing one for you.
So this is a spiritual called Victory?
I'd rather come up with a My Baby Left Me, you know, blues song that we can sing as an a cappella. But spiritual's always good.
Yeah, we got to keep the spirits of the people up, you know?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Put my spiritual... Going on.
Uh-huh. Well, this is Corey Harris and Cedric Watson with a little bit of a taste of some of the music you'd be able to hear as part of their True Blues.
Mm-hmm. Victory is mine. Victory is mine. Victory today is mine. I told Satan, get thee behind, 'cause victory today is mine. Love is mine, love is mine, love today is mine. Oh, I told Satan, get thee behind, 'cause love today is mine.
Happiness.
Happiness is mine. Happiness is mine. Happiness today is mine. Oh, I told Satan, get thee behind, 'cause happiness today is mine.
Peace, 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 peace.
Peace.
peace is mine. Peace is mine. Oh, peace today is mine. I told Satan, get thee behind, 'cause peace today is mine. Joy, joy is mine. Joy is mine. Joy today is mine. 'Cause I told Satan, get thee behind, joy today is mine. Victory, victory is mine. Victory is mine. Victory today is mine. I told Satan, get thee behind, 'cause victory today is mine.
Wow, amen. Thank you so much.
Amen.
Bless you. Wow, was that amazing? Corey Harris and Cedric Watson, True Blues there. That was so.
That's the real Jimmy.
That was great. Really cool.
Testifying music.
Well, tell me a little bit about that, why you chose that, and what, why that, and how that came to your front of mind as the thing to do a cappella.
Well, it's a, that's a tune that my grandma and them would sing, but also this is my granny on my dad's side, but also, the accordion goes really good with that melody, too. It's kind of related to some of those old school French tunes.
Are you using the accordion a little bit percussively in that way?
Oh, is yeah, right? Definitely. We're going to sing that tonight and get people to sing it with us. But Corey and I, whenever we do our collaboration playing blues together, that's when I decided to play this. Not with, like, back home with the band that I play with or any other show. It's just that one day, him and I, we get into these spiritual talks about, you know, just Bible things, related things. And we talk about, you know, Jesus. You know, I started to get into Jesus over the last, like, year and a half of my life. So all these songs like this kind of come to me. And during sound check, we started singing this one. And it just became a good part of the show and get people to sing it, like, with us and everything and get them into that. You know, when you chant these good, how to put this, these messages and these good things like that that go along with these good positive things that's along with God's will, you're manifesting that and you're summoning up that power and that energy and strength, you know?
It's almost like a mantra or something like that in a way. It's a repeated thing and it's a reinforcing of that. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we're getting to the original intent of music. You know, if we look at the ancient sources of music, it's involved with the metaphysical, you know, with getting people into different states of mind so they can think about things in a different way, perceive things differently, you know? And so, yeah, it's important to still be aware of that power and use it well. 'Cause, you know, as we've seen in music, it can be used for whatever intention you have, you know, so.
It also strikes me when you were doing that, that it's such a unifying thing, the way you called out the word, right? So that's, in a way, that's a, I would think, a technique so that the group knows what's the next.
Yeah, we're taking y'all along with us.
That's right.
Right, and so everyone can sing in, everyone can join in. Even if they're not singing, they know what's happening. They're joining into the kind of spiritual nature.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's, thank you so much. That was a treat. I really appreciate that.
We've never done it like that before.
That's pretty cool.
That was really cool. Yeah. I had a little bit of reverb on there. It sounded good, man. You'll listen to it later. You'll be like, okay, that was pretty good.
Yeah, send it to us.
Will do, will do. Well, Rachel, tell us a little bit more about, more people should know, either about this concert, the True Blues Dance that's happening, the Blues Cruise, as you mentioned as well. And
yeah, if you heard that and that got you tapping your leg and wanting to dance, then you should come on down to the Jack tonight at 7 o'clock, because we're going to have a dance.
If it didn't, you have a medical condition.
I believe, yes, absolutely.
Because that should have gotten your leg tapping. Absolutely. Yep. No, but go ahead. So tell us more.
So the Blues Dance is happening tonight at the Jack, 7 o'clock. Tickets will be at the door. We might still have 2 tickets for the Blues Cruise left. And if you can't get tickets, put your name on the wait list. If somebody doesn't show up, we'll give you a call.
Blues Cruise.
Do you guys get a chance to actually kind of do this sort of thing, travel around? I mean, I love talking to people who've figured out how to become working musicians. You know what I mean? I mean, it is really something. It's an incredible thing to get to the point where you're able to, you know, make a living doing this incredible thing.
It's still working.
That's what I mean. And there's so many people, you do so much in order for you to kind of be able to express yourself in that artistic way, right? Yeah. You gotta scrap, you gotta deal with promoters, you gotta do all that stuff, you know, everything you gotta do, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about how you've gotten to that point.
Well, for me, we were talking about this in one of our discussions. Just I was thinking about, 160 years ago, there was no profession of blues singer. It was just something you did, you know. It was like an underground thing, first of all. And it wasn't like people were doing it for money, you know. It was a way for them to make sense of what was going on around them and process.
Cultural.
It was culture and way to process their reality, you know, and put meaning into their life, you know. And so I'm trying more and more as I get older to demonetize my concept of the music and not look at it like this thing that I'm squeezing money out of. I got to make a living out of this thing. And, you know, because it's more than that, really, you know, because it was giving us life before it was giving us money, you know? So, yeah.
Well, that's an incredibly cool way of looking at that. That's very
not like I don't want to be compensated, but I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
There's got to be a higher intention with it instead of just like, let me squeeze some money out of this thing. Because then, you know, it becomes something that can be corrupted.
Right. Yeah. So me, I can elaborate on that myself because I'm kind of going in a direction that I'm kind of trying to find something more like involved with the music, but also with just culture in general. But it's a move away from just like only playing music for the most part for a living, you know, like I have these other little side jobs that I do or whatever, but playing music is my main thing that actually keeps my life rolling, you know, but I would like to actually like find something different to do because what it does is after a while you find yourself just depending on your passion, the thing that you love the most, and it can ruin the whole, you know, it can take away. Mm-hmm. From your love for what you do and appreciation.
That's a tough thing, though, because you both have so much talent. I mean, it just oozes, right? I mean, so it must be something that you feel like just wants to come out of you.
Oh, no matter what. Right? No matter what.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in a way, it's I understand it. I think I understand what you're getting at, though. You know, if you put so much into that and that becomes everything, almost becomes you.
That's right.
You know, then you're putting too much into that.
After a while, yeah, you realize, well, it depends. You know, some people, they kind of like ride or die, like die hard musicians, and that's it until the day they die. You know, like I was like Mick Jagger just jumped up on stage the other day when I was playing with Lil Nathan at the.
Oh, yeah.
Nathan.
Mick Jagger come and jump up.
Yeah. Even, I want to say,
non-dancing
like, he's rocking to it. But he came and got up on stage at the Fado Do stage.
I mean, he struts, he's a strutter, but maybe not dancing.
He does something.
I was playing with Nathan Williams for the first time. I jammed with him, and that's pretty interesting. But, you know, some people that they're in it and they're, you know, they can do that. It's their life, and they're going to go like all the way to the day, probably like have a heart attack on stage, even. Yeah, some people are gonna go that far.
Like Johnny Guitar Watson.
Yeah, that's my cousin, you know. But watch this. Like, I don't really see myself being that guy that's like trying to like play music all the way like,
to the end,
to the wheels fall off.
Yeah,
I kind of want to be like this. Like, universities call me up for the anthropological, whatever music ethnological class. Yeah. It's like, Mr. Cedric Watson, you want to squeeze a few fiddle tunes out for him?
We'll call you, man.
So, Mr. Cedric, how did you grow up and where? You know, cool. I want to be one of them kind. Not trying to, you know, I don't want to be a. So that's just the kind of direction I'm going in, you know, and also I would like to start recording and singing more spiritual things, and, you know, about spiritual life and God, Jesus, all those things that people don't like to hear about nowadays.
God. There's definitely an audience for all that, right? Yeah.
Jesus.
There's an audience for anything that's important to the artist, right?
Yeah.
If the artist brings it forward with the conviction and passion, that's
true.
And
if you conviction and passion.
That's it. It's the passion.
Key words.
Yeah. So, well, thanks. It's so great to meet you guys. Thanks so much for coming in and treating us to that beautiful a cappella version of Victory. That was really
studio,
awesome.
Lovely studio, lovely station y'all have here.
Thank you.
Nice and clean. Love to see clean radio station.
Yes, it's very clean in here. Very clean.
Yeah, because I've worked in dirty radio stations before. It's like, I can't even do my show because it's dirty in here.
Some of them still smoking cigarettes in there.
Beautiful. I love it in here. So thank you all.
They're still smoking cigarettes in there. Got an ashtray.
I've seen it all.
So wow.
Oh, God.
So where you guys come from, eh?
Well, we got thanks so much again for coming in. I really appreciate it. Again, the True Blues Dance is tonight, 7 p.m. at the Jack. And then there's tickets at the door. The Blues Cruise, as Rachel was saying, is maybe a couple of tickets left. And if not, you can still put your name on the wait list if you want to get there for the 8 p.m. Boat tour that leaves Stater Harbor at 8 p.m. That's tomorrow night. And then should we mention anything else about what's happening with Jazz and Classics, Rachel?
Just keep an eye on our socials. Go to our website, jazzandclassics.org, because we got more shows coming up next week.
All right. Thanks to both of you for coming in. And thank you so much, Rachel, for bringing these folks in. And have a great couple of concerts coming up.
We will.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Take care.
Well, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on community supported KTOO. And so happy to have joining me now from all the way over in Auk Bay, the Auk Bay Ocean Guardians Club. Allison Smith is out there. Allison, are you there? Do you hear us?
Yeah, we're here. I'm here with some students. Can you hear us? Yeah,
absolutely. Hi, how are you?
Good. We're doing great.
Well, can you tell me the students you have with you?
Yep, I'll point to them. They'll say their names.
Okay.
Liam, Addie H, Julie, Tammy Bam, Lucas.
Did you get that?
Yes, I got it all. That was really exciting to hear all your voices. Thanks so much for joining us. And Allison, maybe I'll turn it to you first, just if you could just explain what the Auk Bay Ocean Guardians Club is all about.
Sure. We are under NOAA, and we work with a grant from NOAA, and the purpose of Ocean Guardians is really to protect our ocean from things like pollution and marine debris and reduce our impact on the environment. And so at Auk Bay, we've been doing a lot of things toward that.
Well, that's cool. So tell me a few of the things, and you can get anytime you want to have a student come on and explain what they're doing and that kind of thing as well. But tell me about a few of the things that you've been doing. I know you have composting is a big thing.
We've been picking up trash. Yeah. And planting our gardens at Auk Bay. Yeah.
Where do you pick up the trash?
Around
the school and around the bay.
Around the bay as well. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, number one, it's great that you're doing that. First of all, picking up the trash and making sure that the trash isn't out in the environment. And then tell me about what you do with it. Do you compost it then?
Julie and Addie, do you want to talk about that?
I don't know.
When we pick up, one of the things that we really need to have is measurable data. So we weigh the trash and we kind of record and take notes about what we collect.
That's really cool. So I know that I'm going to ask one of the students a question, which is, can one of the students there, or maybe a few of the students there, tell me about the six R's that you guys concentrate on?
Go for it, Addie.
So we look at recycle, rot.
Go ahead, Cammie.
Recycle, rot, reduce, and isn't it?
We've been really focused a lot on rot.
I like the rot part of it. I was thinking about rethink. That's a good one.
I was just about to say that.
That's a good one.
And I can let the kids talk a little bit about, so we've composted almost 6,000 pounds of food waste this year. So that's our big rot thing. And the kids, it's caused the kids, because there's been so much waste, to start to rethink our lunchroom. And Cammie, maybe you can talk a little bit about the ideas that you've had about the lunchroom, because it is a lot of waste.
Me, Julie, and a couple other people from our class, we were volunteering in the cafeteria during the second and third grade lunch. And we saw that people, when we told them which one to put it in, they'd look down and look back up at us like we had
like we were crazy about how to sort their stuff.
The people that were volunteering, they said at Gastineau they did a table so that they could look directly at our faces and not our feet. And that's what we were thinking of, because it'd be better so that they wouldn't have to go like this or bend down.
So they wouldn't have to look
so
down.
So they'd have more motivation to put stuff in the right
bin. And so, I remember
people just weren't thinking. They kind of weren't thinking about what they were throwing away or what happens after they throw it away, was what you're sort of saying, it sounds like.
Yeah, they would. We had to constantly, we tell them what to do and they put it in what they think and not what's actually correct.
So just sort, those basics of sorting and making sure that when you're sorting stuff, it ends up kind of most efficiently being reused.
Yeah. And then at the end of everything, we weigh it and then we record it and then we do it again.
Oh, so that's the data collection part of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And so we talked about how to rethink our lunches so that we don't end up with so much being rotten. Do you remember, kids, you were thinking, Julie? Do you want to talk about that?
We were thinking of less portions of food. Because a lot of the times kids would not be eating all their food and they'd just throw it away just because they don't like it and only eat the food they like. And for example, if they didn't like any of the food, they just wouldn't be eating lunch. So we were thinking of putting out foods that everybody did like or more portions of the school liked.
Yeah. And also when you were saying portions, maybe a little bit smaller portions as well, so that people could eat more of the portions that they're served.
Yeah. We were also thinking of, so Addie's mom did a survey of what kids like and what they preferred. And we were going to do the same thing and like either put them up or give them to each class so that we can tally them up and then pick the fruits and vegetables that they like so that they will actually eat and nourish their bodies.
Wow. Well, that sounds like you really thought that one through. That's pretty cool. Can you think of other specific projects or things or ideas that you had about one of the six R's: rethink, refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot?
You want to talk about the microgreens?
Oh, that sounds cool. I really want to hear about the microgreens.
We were growing microgreens and that goes along with planting our gardens. At Auk Bay. Yeah. And we grew and everybody had some microgreens to grow.
Does anybody want to add anything about that?
Could I ask a question about the microgreens? When you say microgreens, does that mean that they're seeds that you put in the ground and you let them grow just for a little while and then you kind of clip them and you eat them right away?
Sort of, yeah. So we've also been using like this coconut pad stuff with dirt on top to grow them. And my mom thought of, for the school, putting microgreens in smoothies, because like the school serves like really big chunks of like broccoli. And she thought, well, if it was just really little, they might want to eat it more.
Did that work?
We haven't tried. So my mom at the STEAM events was trying it out. And on the second time, most of the people voted for broccoli. And it was pretty surprising because I'm not many people eat broccoli.
Yeah, right. Especially kids don't tend to like. I love broccoli, but when I was a kid, I didn't love it as much as I love it now. What other kind of microgreens do you guys grow? I've had, you know, one kind I've had before is, have you ever had the radish microgreens?
We've been growing a lot of microgreens, different ones like radishes, rainbow radishes. We've been growing different kinds of beans like mung beans. And yeah, we've been growing lots of others.
That sounds great. I like that. That sounds fun. And you use those kind of sometimes in smoothies, but sometimes like in salads or things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, what other stuff have you guys been working on? You've got microgreens. You've been doing composting. You're reducing marine debris, which is really cool. Is that part of the picking up the trash thing, removing the marine debris?
Yeah, we would go around and we have a trail behind our school and we would walk around there and pick up all the trash because a lot of people throw the trash back there not thinking.
Yeah.
What did we do with the oysters? We dissected them.
Oh.
We dissected oysters.
Really? Was that kind of gross or what was that like?
What do you think, Tula? You want to talk about that?
It was, for some people, like Addy, for example, she was super grossed out. Yeah. She didn't really want to, she didn't really want to touch it at all. And me and Harper wanted to just get right into it.
Get in there.
Break the stomach and, like, dissect it as much as we could. We even made, like, a hole to put our guts in.
Well, that's cool. I think I might be more with her. I like oysters. I like eating them and everything. So I would be interested in dissecting an oyster. I think that'd be pretty interesting.
It was fun.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And what did you guys discover when you dissected oysters? What did you find out that was maybe a surprise, or what did you learn about oysters?
We figured out that all animals have anuses.
Well, there you go. There's an old saying about that. Everyone's got one. They're like opinions. Yeah.
Last year, we also did a recycling unit by using plastic bottles from home to make jellyfish puppets.
Oh, that's pretty fun. All right. That's a good way of reusing something. You know, I was wondering when you guys walk around and you were doing the debris pickup, and you saw a big place maybe where people had dumped some garbage. How did that make you feel? What message would you like to give people that maybe aren't thinking too much about how they're throwing away their garbage?
To rethink everything, make sure to bring on, like, if you're hiking, make sure to bring a bag for trash if you're bringing snacks or plastic water bottles, because we can reuse them for, like, the water bottles. We can refill them with water and we don't have to throw them away.
Also about water.
Yeah.
Bottles is the metal ones can be reused over and over because you can wash them and use them again. Yeah.
And I think the metal ones sometimes are even more sanitary too. You can wash them with good hot water and soap and get them really clean. So that's a really good point.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Allison, is there anything else you want us to cover with the class while we in the next couple of minutes that we have? Yeah, go ahead.
It looks like Addie has something she wants to say.
Okay, let's hear it, Addie.
So at the end of the year, we also made signs for, like, Earth Day and, like, for, like, no idling signs for the cars, because people, like, keep their cars on while they're just picking up their kid, and it idles a lot.
That's a great, wow, that's a really interesting and a really creative thing to think about. Just something that people do sort of without thinking, maybe, just leave their car on while they're sitting and waiting. Such an easy step to take, but makes a real difference.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I know we're probably close to our time, and I just wanted to say that these kids are really passionate about all of these things. And we've kept data on our lunchroom waste. We've also kept data on all the different classrooms that have picked up trash as a school. And just this week, we got to collaborate some with the kids from Sait Gastineau, who also have an Ocean Guardian Club. And we're looking forward to moving forward and talking more with kids at other schools too in the years to come.
That's really cool. Allison, can you elaborate just a little bit about how this program is facilitated through NOAA?
So yeah, it's run through the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries, or NOAA Marine Sanctuaries, and we get some NOAA staff to help facilitate the program. And this year we had a grant, and the grant helped pay for composts. We also had a bag design competition for a reusable bag that a student designed a bag, and we were able to produce those. And it's paid for things like reusable water bottles, some of our gardening supplies and things like that. So that's kind of how NOAA has helped us. And in return, one of the things, that's why we're really focused on the data, because then we collect that and share it with NOAA, and that's helpful for them. And we've had NOAA scientists come in and help with the club, and also help with our waste audits and those kinds of things.
It's really cool, because I think not only do your students who are, it's a club made up of, you know, second through fifth grade students, get to see practical applications of what they're doing, but they also get to see kind of how science works, data collection, analysis, looking at trends, those sorts of things, trying to figure out cause and effect over a period of time, those sort of behind the scenes things about how science works.
Totally. Totally.
Well, Allison, thanks so much. Again, it's Allison Smith out at the Auk Bay Ocean Guardians Club at the Auk Bay School, and your club made up of second through fifth grade students. Thanks so much, Allison, and thanks to all you students.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much. It was great talking to all of you. I really appreciate it.
You too. Thanks. And
keep on sciencing out there. Yes.
We will.
All right. Thanks again.
Yep. Bye.
That was awesome. That's the Auk Bay School and the Auk Bay Ocean Guardians Club. Well, coming up next, let's hear a little bit from Ed Byarski and Garden Talk.
So pruning, let's talk pruning today. What should people be considering when they're thinking about looking at their budding trees?
Well, there's some real basic pruning rules, which are, first, take out any deadwood. The deadwood doesn't do the tree any good. And you can see that it's not budding. Right now, trees are budding, whether it be apples and cherries or maples and other stuff. So the deadwood, broken branches. This winter, with some of that heavy snow we had, there's been a lot of broken branches. So trim those off neat and clean is important. And the other really important thing is the tools, having clean, sharp tools, whether it be small hand pruners, loppers, handsaw, chainsaw, depending on how big your pruning job is. But looking at the tree, looking at, say, an apple tree, and the goal is to, for an apple tree at least, or, and applies to cherries also, is kind of slightly open center. We want there to be not a whole bunch of crossing branches that are rubbing on each other. So we'll remove one of those rubbing branches. We want to open the tree enough so that the sun gets into the flowers and the fruit and the leaves, of course. That's important. And they even talk about, well, a robin should be able to fly through your tree without hitting his wings. So think about opening it up, especially if it's an old neglected tree. It can be some of the, especially the cherry trees downtown, are severely, really thick, crossing, tangled. Opening that up is really going to help. Remembering that pruning this time of year is going to stimulate new growth. So you don't want to take too much off. They'd say 20% maybe at a time of the tree branches to take off. If you take too much off, then all that energy that's stored in the roots starting to come up in the sap has to go somewhere. It's going to stimulate new growth. Well, if you stimulate too much new growth, that means you have to do more pruning. It's kind of a vicious circle this time of year. But with timing, there's actually a time during like from mid-June to mid-July for pruning also, same trees, which is going to slow down the growth because most of the energy in the tree is up in the branches and trunk. So by removing branches that time of year will not stimulate new growth if it's just growing too vigorously. So you might prune the same tree twice in the same year. Making clean cuts, like I mentioned earlier, don't leave stubs. Don't leave a 1-inch stub sticking out off the main branch where you cut off a side branch. Trim it down clean, close to the trunk. There's kind of a little swelling area they call the branch collar. And if you trim it to right above that, then the branch will heal over more quickly after that. And we don't paint the wounds. We don't paint the cut surfaces with any paint or rubbery stuff, sealer. We don't fill big cracks in the trunk with cement or other stuff anymore. That is not beneficial. But again, cleaning tools too, in between, especially moving from tree to tree, if you have a little container with some 10% bleach solution, you can dip your pruning tools into that or paint them with it, so that you're not transferring diseases from one tree to another. And then also, very often we'll see a lot of mosses and lichens on the trees. I mean, that's normal. It grows here. We can't stop it. But we can remove that. We can just use a scrub brush or just tear it off on a dry day. Particularly, you can remove that. Because again, it holds moisture on the tree and potentially can hold disease and fungus in that moist moss. So if we can remove some of that is good. And along with all of those, at the same time, it's time for fertilizing the fruit trees too. And we go out along the drip line, the outer edges where the tips of the branches are. That's where the most active roots are. And we can punch holes into the ground down 4 to 6 inches with a bulb planter or a crowbar, piece of rebar, and put some fertilizer in those holes, a balanced fertilizer that will then get down to those active tree roots. And then that will be taken up by the tree this year. And this isn't going to benefit the fruit crop this year. Those buds and flowers are already formed, but this will be longer term benefit. Removing the weeds, grass around the tree, less competition with the tree. Getting some seaweed, throw some seaweed out there around that drip line too. That's also going to be beneficial.
That's KTOO's Chloe Plesnack talking to Master Gardener Ed Byarski. And joining me now from the Juno Community Foundation is Amy Skilbred, the Executive Director, and Monica Doherty, who's the Program Manager. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Yeah. We go from kids to gardens to blues musicians to now let's talk about what's happening at the Juno Community Foundation.
Well, we're going to talk a bit about grants and scholarships and applications.
Okay,
so
great.
So first, starting off is with the Juno Hope Endowment CBJ Social Service Grants. And this year we were able to give out just about $3 million in grant funds on social service areas. And that included 22 different organizations.
Wow, that's an amazing statistic, really. That's what an impact to the community.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, the idea behind the Community Foundation. But the way it's grown and the way that this kind of process has been developed, where now 22 organizations are benefited by $3 million. Amazing.
It's great. Yeah. And I did a quick check and looking back to 2015, which was the first year that we started these grants. The foundation has provided a little over $10.7 million, and CBJ, we give out their funds as well, and they provided $9.9 million. So we're We're over $20 million since 2015, so 9 years.
It's an interesting part of the development of the foundation, right? And that you've become such a strong, you have such a strong ability to work with agencies and grant agencies that then CBJ sees the efficiency of using you as the pass-through agency that then can administer these funds.
Yeah, it works. It works really well. It works out well also for the applicants because there isn't two application processes. And then we can do all the, we do about a 3-month process of listen and learns where we bring folks together. And it's really a collaborative grant process. So it's not so much everybody's competing as, we get people together and they identify what are the gaps, what's needed that might not be happening. And we talk about it. Can funding help solve the problem or is it not funding? And then if it is, we go ahead and move on and fund it, the Navigator program where we have navigators for people who are homeless and people who are needing assistance. And one is at St. Vincent de Paul, another at Aware, another at the Glory Hall. And we've had these different projects that keep continuing and they came out of those meetings, including Housing First, came out of one of those, the very first meeting that we had.
I mean, not to get off track, but boy, it must be satisfying in a way to look back at history like that and sort of realize how much JCF has done. It's incredible.
It's been great. Yeah. It's been great partnering with the CBJ on giving out the funds and making it work. And one of the big focus, we've got two big focuses now besides just that grant program, and that's in housing those folks who are homeless. And really, we're heading up a collaborative effort that's called the Juno Nonprofit Housing Development Council. Basically, it's, every year there's going to be another project that we're putting forward from that group. So right now, 28 more rooms are going up on Housing First. And then hopefully next year we'll have raised enough funds so that 51 more rooms at a new place with Gasnoe Human Service will go up. And so we know the solution to homelessness, and that's more housing.
Yeah. And obviously you're one of the agencies out there that's kind of heard the need and kind of helped identify that need and then worked on these solutions.
Yeah. And we just play the collaborative role. It just takes time. You're bringing together amazing nonprofit leaders that we have in town. And they're the ones who have to say, okay, I'm managing all this day-to-day work. And I also have buildings already. And okay, I'll jump in and help, raise $11 million to build more.
Right.
And so just being able to support them is great part of what we do.
Well, great. So let's keep. I know you've got a little bit of a list. Let's go down the list here. The cool stuff that you guys are up to.
Yeah. So let's go to scholarships,
Monica,
for a little bit.
Let's talk to you about what's going on with scholarships. Yeah.
So our 5 scholarships have now closed and the selection committees have gone through their process. 35 students were chosen area wide. And this year, just about $49,000 total is going to be given out. So it's a very exciting process. This being my first year, it was just really wonderful and inspiring to look over some of those scholarships and the future of Juno and Southeast just going out.
Is there a wide breadth of kind of areas of where these scholarships are going to go towards?
Yes. Yes and no. Some of them, I felt like Juno and Southeast was it being a coastal place. I saw a lot of marine biology applicants.
We need them.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
I think it's appropriate that we do see those types of applicants. A lot of artists as well, which was really cool to see. But it was just for me personally, new to the Juno Community Foundation, it was a fun and inspiring aspect of my job.
Yeah.
And to be part of that has just been fantastic.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so are there kind of next opportunities to apply for other funding sources for either, you just mentioned artists, for instance?
Yes, so we do have an individual artist grant opening up. Check our website, Juno
CF.
CF.org. Junocf.org. Thank you.
I write that down every time.
All right.
I believe, is opening June 1st. And this past year, there was 4 artists award, I believe, between, I think, $5,000 and $10,000. Dollars. So excellent opportunity. Check it out. You can also email us at info@junocf.org to get more information about that. Additionally, the Douglas Dornan grant opportunity, which supports organizations designed to support children, youth, elders, or any other groups of special needs. That grant is open and it's ending June 1st. So definitely check those out.
That's more for organizations rather than individuals. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So those are our other two opportunities going on right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Douglas Dornan is open throughout Southeast Alaska. So that's a, you know, we have a couple. There was, Monica talked about the artists' scholarships, not the award, the scholarships that are already done. And that's also a area-wide northern Southeast Alaska. So we try and, you know, we get folks who start grants and start scholarship funds with us who are from Juneau and who aren't from Juneau. And so as that broadens out, people have been, you know, saying, can we have a scholarship there too?
Can you talk about that a little bit? If someone is in that position, if they're sort of looking at funds or maybe it's a legacy type thing and they, you know, how can they use Juneau Community Foundation as a resource for targeting those funds?
Oh, definitely. That's, you know, that's sort of our sweet spot. Our value add for the community is helping people figure out how they get done what they'd like to do, whether that's doing it now or putting it in a will or putting the community foundation in there as the beneficiary of an IRA or something like that. And so, you know, I often say our story, you know, it sort of took a while to figure out what's our story, because we give all this money out. So all those other stories are those agencies' stories that we help out with. But our main story is that, you know, the hero is the donor who comes in the door and says, I want to do, you know, something in this area, but I don't know how to get it done. And then we listen to it and we say, yeah, here, we can help you figure that out, and puts together a fund that they can then use as their fund. And so if we do our job well, the outcome is, you know, as we guide them, basically, if we do that well, the outcome is more resources to address needs in Juneau.
Is there a kind of entry level, a dollar amount kind of thing? Like if you said, oh, I would do that, but I've only got $10,000 that I have that I left over. I only have $5,000. Is there an aggregate way that people can build that? Is there something?
Yeah, we have different funds. So we do have minimums for most of our funds. Mm-hmm. And that has basically increased a bit over time. We don't want to end up with thousands of different funds with $500 in them or something like that, which, while it's a great gift, $500, it still becomes a lot to manage, and a lot of foundations get sort of weighed down by that.
There's all the little parameters that might be around specific gifts. Yeah.
So what we do is we can set up a fund, and then we set it up with the idea that the organization or the people who want that fund will grow it over time. And, you know, usually we try and get the funds to be about $25,000 over 3 or 4 years, if that's the case, that they need to grow it. And then with agencies that come to us, like nonprofit organizations, and they want to have a fund, either a stewardship fund or an endowment, which are a little bit different. Stewardship fund, you can take the money out whenever. They will do like the Juneau Ski Club. They'll start it with, okay, we got 3,000.
Right.
And
little kitty.
Yeah. We say, okay, you really want to grow it to 100,000 as soon as you can, and probably within 5 years, so that they have a target and keep working at it. And then they're able to receive enough from it for it to make a difference in any given year. Yeah.
But another great resource, a way to sort of figure out how to organize that growing of a fund, growing of an endowment, growing of a long-term fund that can keep a organization's goals going into the future.
Yeah. Wow. Then we do have 4 community impact funds. And people can give to those. And one is arts and culture, another youth and education, parks, trails and recreation, and health and social services. And those anyone could give whatever amount they want to. And that is actually a way that several people have chosen in legacy giving to just.
Seems simple.
Split it between the 4 of them.
Right. Yeah. Right. Very easy.
I don't know, because people are really involved in this town in a lot of different areas. And so
I'm not just a skier. Right. I'm not just an artist.
You might know me as this, but I do this.
That's
too.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Like Monica's an artist.
Monica's a great example of that. Yeah. Right. Someone who's maybe first known as an artist, but also is working with the Juno Community Foundation.
Just a teacher. So,
Yes, of course. That's right. Yeah. Well, anything else you guys want to cover while we're talking here? Thanks so much for just kind of answering my questions about those things. Anytime I have the opportunity to talk to you, I always like to guess bend your ear a little bit about like, well, what about this? What about this? So it's just great to know of all the resources that the Juno Community Foundation has.
Well, it's fun to be able to explain them and talk with you about them.
So, anything else? We have maybe a minute left, and if not, that's fine too. It's great to talk to you guys. Again, the Juno Hope Endowment, CBJ Social Service Grants awarded, and that's really awesome. Yep.
And then just the new housing that's going up, and we're always receiving grants or receiving donations for Feeding Juno Kids, which is our other big one, to provide funds to enable the weekend backpacks, the vacation school bags. And we're going to be putting together 650 bags of food in a week to give out to kids so that 2 weeks before vacation or after school ends, but before summer programs start, there's room in there.
Great.
So thank you.
Thank you, Amy Skillbred and Monica Doherty from the Juno Community Foundation. Thanks so much. And that's it for Juno Afternoon. Thanks, everyone, for listening.